Well, Madagascar's in trouble. The forests had a reprieve in April as logging was restricted by the government. But the wildlife, as you may have seen in the papers yesterday, lizards especially, are in decline. There and around the world. 20% down in some cases. Chris Raxworthy has been studying these creatures for years.
The initial reactions to Madagascar was, you know, what a stunning and amazing place. But at the same time, you immediately became aware of the conservation issues and the state of the economy, the poverty, and you know, many of the other sort of issues that affect many developing countries.
That you might be looking at something that's disappearing before your eyes.
That's right. When I was first going to Madagascar, of course, I didn't really have anything to compare it with. But the longer you spend in Madagascar, you start to return to sites and you realize that the forest is shrinking, or species that before were abundant have become much rarer. And you also hear other stories of decline. So in some cases, it can be quite a depressing situation. The other side to that, though, is you also see new reserves being created, a greater awareness of the biodiversity in Madagascar. And so there's lots of positive things that could happen as well.
What kind of lizard were you after?
Well, when I first went there, it was a general survey of amphibians and reptiles in a reserve called Zarmena. Now, that diversity is huge, currently estimating at least around 700 species of amphibians and reptiles in Madagascar. And almost certainly that number is going to continue to increase. But more recently, I've become particularly focused on chameleons and reptiles in general.
Chameleons? That's interesting. What are they like?
Well, the chameleons are this amazing group of lizards. They have these incredible adaptations. They have these pincer-like feet. They have these independently rotating turret-like eyes, a tongue which is about twice the length of their body, and often exaggerated ornamentation on the heads. So they're a really spectacular, bizarre group of lizards.
And they really do change their colour.
Yep, they can change their colour as well. Now, there are other lizard groups that can do the same thing, but the chameleons are particularly good at it. The vivid colorations that they have anyway are remarkable. And those colorations are primarily used for communication rather than for camouflage.
How do they manage to have a tongue that's twice as long as their body coiled up inside?
Well, it's not actually coiled up, it's more concertinaed up. So if you imagine this very thin tube and it's all sort of squished in on itself on a rod, that's the way the chameleon tongue is actually kept inside the mouth. And when it shoots it forward, the muscles actually push on this slimy rod. And just imagine when you've like flip a cherry pip out from between your fingers, you're pushing down really, really hard. And then finally you get to that point where the force is just strong enough to suddenly push backwards onto the pip and it flies out. That's what happens to the chameleon tongue. This tube, this sticky tube, then flies off the end of this rod and it's propelled forward and unconcertinas itself and ends up extending out to twice the length of the body.
Catching a fly, and then how does it get back in?
Yeah, well, sometimes the very largest chameleons in Madagascar have a tongue which is powerful enough to actually catch birds. This thing has an end which is sticky and comes somewhat lobe in shape, and it actually grabs around the prey. With its elastic properties, it then actually bounces back into the mouth, a bit like a bungee cord.
Must be amazing to watch. Have you seen it many times?
Many times, yeah. And it happens so fast that you can only really capture it on camera. But you can see the early stages of it where the chameleon's eyes suddenly both focus forward, which is unusual. Normally their eyes are moving totally independently, but they face forward and they really focus in. And then you'll see the mouth open very, very slightly, and then the tongue gets pulled gently out of the mouth a little way, and you see this blob appearing, and then suddenly, out it comes.
And the poor bird, is that a perch bird or out of the air?
Perch birds. I'm not sure if anybody's really documented seeing that in the wild, but with the largest chameleon in the world that occurs in Madagascar, supposedly people have seen this with things like very small finches.
I've heard a rumour that they don't live very long, is that right?
Well, that's a really interesting question. So there are chameleons in captivity that can live 5-7 years. But we discovered a species in Madagascar just 2 years ago, which only lives a year. And in fact, most of its life is spent as a developing embryo in an egg. And the life history of this species is much more like an insect, where it hatches and the rainy season starts, grows really quickly, matures, breeds, and dies at the end of the rainy season. And the whole population is then just represented by developing eggs underground.
Fascinating. Now tell me, what have you been studying in terms of temperature difference and how they live up and down the mountain?
There's a whole group of amphibians and reptiles that are only found on the tops of mountains. And these are cold-adapted, restricted to often single mountain tops or mountain ranges. And these species are particularly vulnerable with increasing temperatures. You're forcing these species to actually move further upslope, up mountains, just to stay in the same temperature area. And the big concern at the moment is with these that are already sitting at the very tops of these mountains is with further global warming, they're going to have nowhere to go. And essentially, the habitat that they occupy right now may not exist in 50 or 100 years' time. And
these are You've observed this, have you?
Yes. I surveyed the highest mountain in Madagascar, Sarah Tanana. We went back twice, 1993 and 2003. And we weren't expecting this result at all, but we actually found on the second survey that our species had shifted on average about 50 metres upslope over a 10-year period, which might not sound like very much, but it also fitted with warming patterns of temperatures in Madagascar, which itself hadn't been very well studied prior to us actually crunching the numbers on this. And what this means is if this level of warming continues over a 50 or 100-year period, you're going to be dealing with upslope shifts of 250, 500 metres or more. And in some cases, these species are only found within less than 600 metres of the very highest summit in the mountain area where they exist. So these are populations and species which really will go extinct if this level of warming and movement continues.
Yes, that's been matched by studies with other animals in other places, hasn't it?
It has, particularly in temperate areas. For example, in the Alps, there have been studies showing upslope movement of trees and animals. But one of the things that was very much underappreciated is the degree of change which is going on in the tropics. What makes the tropics particularly of concern is because you have all these species which are confined to the tops of just single mountains, the degree of endemism is much more extreme than in temperate areas. So that means that climate changes are going to drive a much greater amount of extinction in tropical areas.
I wonder if that kind of pattern is something that's happened before. In other words, whether the species has been pushed up the mountain before and this is, if you like, part of a natural cycle.
What makes this particular global warming particularly tough for species, though, is a couple of things. First of all, there are some indications we have that the planet really hasn't been much warmer than it is currently over a very, very long period of time. So this is not something which occurred in recent times. So the warming that's going to be occurring is something which is, for many species, something they haven't experienced before. The second thing is that the rate of change is so much faster. So what we're seeing now is maybe 10 or 100-fold greater than what has occurred in the past due to natural phenomena. And I think the third thing, which is also really tough, is that in the past, species could migrate up or downslope on a mountain with continuous habitats. But nowadays, the landscape that they live in is very much fragmented. So, for example, roads or clearings for agriculture, all these things have disrupted the ability of certain species to move.
Are the people in Madagascar worried about their wildlife?
There are a growing number of people in Madagascar now whose livelihood really depends on it. Forest guards, guides, and the tourism sector. Madagascar, until recently, had this booming tourism where I believe the revenue coming in was the largest source of foreign revenue coming now into Madagascar. And I think the last big season they had, there was in the order of about 300,000 tourists that came to Madagascar. So this is bringing a lot of money into the economy. And a big chunk of those tourists are coming primarily because of this biodiversity. So there's a growing interest in wanting to conserve it.
Chris Raxworthy is a curator of herpetology at the American Museum of Natural History in New York, and one of those doing a world survey of lizard numbers. And this week I met a young man in Balmain who's so keen on lizards, he's actually got a tablecloth featuring Chris Raxworthy's chameleons. That was Serge.